Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Come on, son.
Raphael on the track.
Come on, son. Come on, son. Come on, son. Come on, son. Hey, y'all, this is Ed Lover with Come On, Son, the podcast. And, of course, y'all know how we do. Brought to you by CigarsInternational.com. Appreciate all the love. And, of course, Nissan South End Mile, 6889 Jonesboro Road, locally here in Atlanta. Joining me in the studio today is one of the most iconic groups to – I don't like – when I talk about hip-hop, I hate to separate. You know, a lot of people, they separate. They will go one of the most iconic hip-hop groups to come from the South.
Right.
You know, I don't like to separate because to me, hip hop has always been this universal music the way we wanted it to be, the way we spread it out from your own TV raps. We always wanted it to be for everybody. And when hip hop really started blowing up, it was for everybody and it's still for everybody. So when I call y'all a iconic hip hop group, that's right where I'm going to leave it at right there.
No,
I'm not going to regionalize it or localize it or put it in any one city or any one region. The Goody Mob is in the building with me.
Yes, God.
Welcome, man.
What's
I got
up,
the
world?
Entire fucking Goody Mob.
What's up,
like
world?
this is crazy. Like the fellas are here. How y'all doing, man?
God bless OG.
Oh man, it is absolutely wonderful to see y'all, man. How did four young dudes from Atlanta come together to form the Goody Mob? How did that happen?
Oh, that's
y'all can make a long story.
I was just about to say
you can make a story as long as you want to. We got time,
story,
baby. Listen, well, I had Prize on from the Fugees.
I heard that. I heard him.
And we talked.
He went in.
I want to talk. Mm-hmm. Y'all tell me how the Goody Mob started.
Let's get it on.
Well, I have to say that T-Mo and I, we had some things going on in high school. T-Mo had something he was doing called Ice Cold Tea. And I had a song called Him. So we was just letting each other hear it. And next thing you know, we was at the studio together at Ghetto Records down here off in Southwest Atlanta off of Walker Street, where you won't even know what it is right now. But we got there, and then we made a song called It's a Goody Mob Thing You Wouldn't Understand. T-Mo and I did that, man. Once we did that, we was going to school with Gip. I went to school with Gip, and CeeLo came in much later as far as going to school with us. But CeeLo was at a cookout with me one day over my partner Glenn Cookhouse.
Cook.
And he heard that I can rap. I heard that he can rap, man. So we got into a cypher, man.
Yeah.
And just and got it was just rapping, man. Just got straight to it. Just got straight to it. But little did we know, CeeLo had his thing going. So now we meet Mr. Gip. Now, Gip and I was in a group called Six Sense way back in the day when Organized Noise was still sampling James Brown records.
Oh, right.
But at that time, Gip was like, he was doing the rhyming, and one of the producers named Ray Murray, he was doing the rhyming, and also he was producing the beats.
Ray was rhyming then?
What?
Wow.
Yeah, he's a pillar, man. He's a pillar in that. So Gip and we did a song called, 10 to midnight, and this was during the Desert Storm War. But we didn't really get that type of recognition until we all hooked up at the Dungeon. You feel what I'm saying? So T-Mo and I brought the Goody Mob Lumberjacks up in there. Big Gip brought the East Point Chain Gang vibe up in there, and CeeLo Green.
Now tell me about who else was it? Just you two in the Goody Mob Lumberjacks?
Mm-hmm.
That was the name of your group, the Goody Mob Lumberjacks.
Actually, it was Goody Mob, but the reason why we said Lumberjacks is because we lived in the woods. You know what okay. I'm saying? It was rough, rugged, and raw. You know what I'm saying?
Woods.
So that was the kind of vibe then, man. But like I said, once we got up into the dungeon and was able to corral all the emotions and all the thoughts together, we came up with something real beautiful, man. It was the Goody Mob, man.
Right.
And CeeLo came up with the good die mostly over bullshit. You take one O away, and God is in every man of blackness. That's when really we started really getting the meaning of what Goody Mob really was, because Goody Mob was born in the traps of Howard Mill Road off of Martin Luther King Jr. Drive.
Uh-huh.
You feel what I'm saying? Back in the trap where niggas are selling dope and all that. That's where the name was born. I had a big homie named Big Lim. He turned us on to like cuts like P-Funk, I mean George Clinton, cause I'd never heard of that stuff before. But while we was in the trap doing our thing, he started playing all that music. So it's like, man, this is what we doing, man. We got these goodies in here. We the Goody Mob.
Right.
That was behind selling contraband. But once we got out of that, we formulate Goody Mob into something else, which is the good die mostly over bullshit. And that was something that all four of us was looking at in our own hood and started realizing that. And that's why Soul Food, that album, is the way it is right now.
Right. Absolutely. T-Mo, tell me what you thought of Cujo, first time you met him.
Man, first time I met Cujo, I can remember this, man. Ninth grade, all the girls liked him. You know what I mean? He was a knockout for all the women back in at Mays High School. And I was like, man, who is this dude? It just kept on talking about Willie. I'm like, man, who is this guy? And it's just funny, you know, once I saw him, it was just some type of energy he had. Well, I ain't really want to try him, you know what I mean? Because I heard he was knocking folk nose off his face. You know what I'm saying? But I just felt like he'll be a good person to team up with. You know, since I was new to the school, he was new. You know, we were both ninth graders. And I swear to God, after that, he ended up coming on my house. I was trying to DJ at that time. I wasn't really interested in rapping right then. I wanted to be a DJ. Next thing I know, I'm coming to pick him up from home, taking him home from school, and we just kind of just jailed, man, naturally. It was not, and he played football, and I played football.
Okay, so y'all both play football in high school?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So you guys are in high school playing football. Rap is what, a side hobby for you?
Rap was really, it was not really a side hobby at that time for me. It wasn't even a hobby for me. You know, I used to admire Cujo because he was a rapper, and he could rap. I mean, he was saying some raps back then, and I didn't really know how to put words together back then. I would rap somebody else's raps and tell them if somebody hadn't heard the song, I'd say that was me. So that really was my forte, man. I always been inspired by music and always have loved music. I grew up around, I don't know if you know this guy by the name of Michael Webster.
Okay.
But he's like one of the greatest DJs around Atlanta, Georgia. He came out the Toomp era. He kind of inspired Toomp. Him and Toomp used to work together. So I used to go over Toomp house back in the days when I left school, watch Toomp do it. Mike Fresh might be over there. Luke might be over there. JT Money. I mean, he lived right in Cascade, right in the area with all us. So just to be inspired by him, watching him do what he does, and, you know, it inspired me. You know what? I think I might be able to do this. So
right.
I went and took my money and went to the studio, dude named Haywood on Martin Luther King, spent about $800 with him, and put together me a record. And my uncle at the time used to own Charles Disco on Simpson Road. That's like a landmark for the A. You know what I mean? And he let my uncle say, go ahead. You want to try it, Terry? Go ahead. That's my nickname, Terry. So he was like, go ahead, Terry, try it. So I went up there and I played my music. I ain't even gonna lie to you, man. It cleared the dance floor, man.
Oh, wow.
It won't get the heck up out of there, man. You know what I'm saying?
Never did make no dance.
I didn't make dance music back then. I was like I said, I was really inspired at that time by Miami type of music. You know, New York music was bomb.com. At first, that was how I used to make people think I had skills. I used to be a Kool G Rap fan and a Big Daddy Kane fan, and I would learn a couple of their records and go back, you know, around the people I worked with and spit a verse or two, and they'd be like, oh, man, this the dude that can rap. You know what I mean? And that just kind of just spawned to making me want to learn how to do it, man. I learned how to do it, and now I'm running with these.
Man, I don't tell you, when Beat Street and Breaking came out, it changed Atlanta, bro.
How so?
Man, I'm going to tell you how so. I used to go to Southwest Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
And right after that movie came on, the next day, everybody was in school with suede Adidas, no shoestrings.
Oh, wow.
Kangos, Gazelles. I'm talking about jumpsuits, the whole nine, man. And it was like, We was break dancing up in middle school like that. Once that came out, man, we was totally influenced, bro.
Oh, wow.
Totally influenced, man.
Yeah, that's crazy. How did different sounds, because there wasn't really a South sound yet. There was no sound that was defining the South yet. How much influence did other regions in hip hop have on the South at that time?
No, I guess like to continue on from what Joe was coming from, like, you know, to be so easily influenced and so readily influenced, we were just kind of welcoming to whatever the trend or you know, whatever wave that was coming through around that time. So Atlanta didn't really have an identity,
right,
for the most part. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're just, we were real people. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? Like, you know, but just there was just a much more simpler, you know, time, I think. You know what I'm saying? I don't even really think it was a thought. I don't think we were conscious of anything. I just think that we were just, you know, living in that moment. But then you have definitive moments of that era, like Breaking and Beat Street, where you can identify with something and grasp onto it, you know, something that was tangible. Mm. So I had always looked at New York like it was this life-sized art canvas, you know what I mean? Like, and I just felt like color and, you know, no different than, you know, Melly Mel's rhyme at the end of Beat Street, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
You know, like, which is my favorite rhyme of all time.
Yeah.
It's the best, you know what I'm saying? And I just felt like, you know, as it didn't look parvished. It looked impassioned with art and color and expression. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? Like, and you know, we didn't realize we had a Southern accent either. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we thought New York people had an accent.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Y'all still do think we got an accent.
You know what I'm saying? But then I can say this too, like, to make it even more universal and expound on it a bit more. You know, at the time the technology was limited, you know what I mean? Like, you might have had pertaining to hip hop, you know, a few drum machines. Remember that, the Lindrum?
Yeah, the Lindrum machine.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, you could have a song like Tougher Than Leather by Run DMC, which is just all 808.
Yeah.
Run DMC, and we're tougher than leather.
Yeah.
Leather. Boom, 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 boom,
right.
Boom, boom, boom. Then you could go all the way to the West Coast. You know, Rodney and Joe Cooley, they had finger waves. You know,
that's right.
Like, and they wore 951 Cazelles, and that was dope boy shit in Atlanta. So it was just the drums, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But then you can go to Seattle, and it was, my posse's on Broadway.
Right.
Boom.
Yeah, all those drums.
So everything was together. You know what I'm saying? Like, then you had, you know, the Mighty Zulu Nation, and they sped up the tempo. You know, and for me to read Africa Mbata's story about him, you know, winning that that writership, you know what I'm saying? I guess he wrote an essay or something in alluding to that, and won a trip to Africa or Egypt or either one of them, you know what I'm saying? Like, or London somewhere. But that's when he was turning on the craft work and stuff like that.
Right.
Craft work, Gary Newman, you know what I'm saying? All of that electro movement from out there. Now he made it just, you know, applicable to hip hop, but just, you know, sped up the tempo. And that became the Southern version of it, the Southern reincarnation of it. We called it skating rink music.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So it was Planet Rock. It was Play at Your Own Risk.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, then when we adopted it and made it our own, you know, it became Miami bass. You
right.
You know what I'm saying?
So the Miami bass influence on what Luke and them was doing in Miami was very, very influential in Atlanta.
But, yeah, but its origin is Planet Rock. You know what I'm saying?
Like, right, absolutely.
And its even earlier origin is European German engineering.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you
Trans-Europe Express absolutely. And all of that stuff
so
like
hip-hop
that.
So hip-hop is truly, you know, all-inclusive. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The way that you began the show earlier, to just say, man, like, it's not just black, white, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've been loving shows like The Get Down, you know, on Netflix, and Hip Hop Evolution. I don't know if anybody's watching that, man. Y'all should really go check out Netflix.
Yeah,
look
for
at
sure.
These documentaries and see where it start.
Yeah.
Man, was a Theodore, you know what I'm saying? Like, cool, you know, Cool Herc, you know what I'm saying? Jazzy J, you know what I mean? Like, I know all of the names, so we can get into a long conversation about hip hop.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Tell me about Chain Gang. Mm. What you and Ray was doing before you met these dudes.
Well, Chain Gang really consisted, well, me and Ray, we kind of started. Ray was the first person to move in my neighborhood in 85, 86. He was the first person to show me a drum machine. He was the person to taught Gip how to rap. The first group we had.
Was Gip doing before that, before you met Ray? Any interest in hip hop at all?
Well, my interest was in music mostly because a lady called Jean Karn used to stay in my neighborhood.
Get out of here.
So as a child, I grew up with her son. That was like my best friend. Joseph was the first person, I think, in Atlanta that was a kid at that time that had a full studio in his house.
Oh, wow.
All right. So at Miss Karn's house, that was where I met Stevie Wonder. She was the first to take New Edition on tour when they first came out. Mm-hmm. I met New Edition over her house. So I got Peebo Bryson. So I got to go to her concerts and hang out with her. Her daughter at that time, her name was Miriam. She had her birthday with the Jackson 5 at the Fulton County Stadium.
Oh, wow.
So as a kid, I was kind of like introduced that way, you know, and just to go into a dressing room and see all the shoes, the clothes, and stuff like that, it just kind of like intoxicated
me. Now we know where Gip get his love for clothes from.
Yeah, it was always like that. And you know, after that, we started the Chain Gang. Chain Gang really consisted of Cool Breeze, Chief, who was also on our album, this dude named OZ, and another dude named Cap One. They call him Capone. Ray was really like the producer behind it. Once we started that, if you think about it, if you go back and listen to the Outkast first album, when Dre say, "Big Gip, Goody Mob," I wasn't even in Goody Mob then on the album. We was just now starting to put Goody Mob together on the first Outkast album.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? After that, that's when we recorded Blood. I mean, when we recorded Blood at Curtis Mayfield house, and I think that was like the first time that we started saying, okay, the Goody Mob, it's all four of us. That's what
really?
We adopted, yeah.
How do y'all end up at Curtis Mayfield house? Please, somebody tell me the story.
It was like our first album. I think we had did the Outkast album in Bosstown. So, Bobby Brown studio at the time. And I think Raiden was like, man, we spent so much fucking money up in there, man. Let's spend about $1 million, $2 million. So, like, we need to go. I think we want to record somewhere else for the Goody Mob instead of just doing Boss Time. So then Reek come one day was like, yo, we can record over Curtis Mayfield house. We was like, where he stay? He said, on Cameron Road. I was like, what? He said, on the other side of Cameron Road. So we go over to Curtis Mayfield house, and we fell in love with it, man. And it was so funny, like, I tell this story all the time, like the jumpsuit that I wore on Soul Food, that was out of Curtis Mayfield's closet.
Oh, wow.
So in his bedroom, he used to have the actual tapes from the Reel to Reels from Superfly, all his albums. So it was like being inside of his house, man, and recording our first album, it was like we was under a microscope of somebody who we loved, admired, and cared about his opinion.
Right.
So I think that's the reason why Soul Food came out the way it did, because we wanted to make sure we impressed our elders at the time.
Yeah.
Especially being inside of his house.
Yeah, Curtis, that's big, going to be in Curtis Mayfield house. Who's the first person to come to the dungeon? How did all of you guys end up in that spot and in that space? Because I saw something on it when they did a documentary on it and they showed the actual house. How did all y'all end up in that space, man?
I think Git was there first.
It was Rico moved. That's after the TLC. Rico moved and said, man, yo, we moving over here to the dungeon, Lakewood. That was like when Joe tell the story that him and CeeLo was rapping against each other that day. I went back and I told Ray, I said, yo, man, like, I seen Cujo, I seen Joe rap against CeeLo, and Lo just broke out and started singing. He was like, he started singing. I said, yeah, he started singing. I ain't never seen nobody do that shit before. He was like, hey, man, tell everybody to come to the dungeon. And I think within that month, I think everybody started showing up at the dungeon, like staying. Like, that's when everybody started really, like, sitting down and really starting to put, you know, the Outkast album together and really formulating who we were. And it was dope because at the dungeon, we never could record. So it was just all day of music and all day of rhymes. And going, sitting by Ray saying, listen to this, he'd be like, nah, that shit ain't it, write it over. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? So
that's what y'all was doing all day. Y'all never recorded that?
Never recorded at the dungeon. Never. Not one song.
It was some demo things we recorded.
Yeah, last time when me and Cujo came, we weren't really interested in being, you know, we didn't know nothing. But actually, the Dungeon family had what didn't exist at that particular time. Yeah. And, we just wanted to come over there to get some tracks from them. We knew that they had a relationship with TLC and they had a relationship with L.A. Reid and LaFace. And we were trying to figure out how to get us a record deal. Me and Joe had recorded like 13 songs already. So we was trying to go. We were ready to go. We was already performing on BET. We were bubbling real good at that particular time.
Right.
And we just like, look, Ray, man, can you give us one of them beats, man? Y'all boys got some next level beats. Let's just give us one. So we went in there with him and vibe one night after everybody left. It was just us two left. And he gave us a beat. We wrote to the song, you know, and it was just okay. You know, it was just okay, you know. But it was the start of something good because it made me want to come back again and again and again. And then the welcoming spirit that was in that house, you know, it was always, we want to feed you. I had my own money. Everybody had their own money. But for some reason, Reek wanted to. He wanted to set it out for everybody all the time. Whenever he went to get something to eat, he ain't come back with one plate. He come back with enough for everybody to eat.
Right.
Which created an environment of love, you know what I mean? Brotherly love, you know? And it was just awesome to be a part of something like that at the beginning stages. I remember when Outkast wasn't even Outkast yet. You know what I mean? It was over there trying to figure it out, too. And we was all just over there just so organic. Everybody just rapping and just wanted to prove themselves. As soon as you walk down them stairs, and they playing a beat. It was like, okay, everybody looking at you. They see, you know, you the one, you on Front Street. You rapping. But it was fun. It wasn't no critical thing. Everybody was just embracing whatever you brought to the table. And like Gibbs say, one thing about CeeLo, when he brought that singing thing to it, I mean, he was the first. He was the first. Drake doing it, now all them doing it. That's good. But he the first person I ever heard blend singing with rap. You know what I mean? I can say that. And it was just so many talented people that even didn't even get a chance to come out that was over in the dungeon also. So, I mean, that
CeeLo, were you hearing what was going on in New York at the time? Were you getting, like, the old school tapes of the Cold Crush and all of that stuff?
I was just about to say Cold Crush.
Fantastic Romantic Five and all of that.
Funky Four Plus One More. Yes. You know, Shy Rock, all that. You know what I'm saying? So I happen to be... ahead, as they say, you know what I'm saying? Like that's an East Coast term for student. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You feel me? So yeah. But so I was about to say that wasn't the first person I heard. So I heard them. I heard all of those routines. You know what I'm saying? And then the first maybe was UTFO who had broke. You know, they had the song called Fairy Tale Lover.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm saying? So they had done a lot of singing too. I was like, you know what I mean? You know, then maybe the next. Big look was like maybe like Slick Rick, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Like Lottie Dottie.
Right.
Like that, you know what I mean? I think what more signified me, maybe, and I'm not answering it for people putting words in my book, maybe it was just what I was singing about. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So my thing, and especially with more of a Southern aesthetic, was like more of Negro spiritual.
Right.
You kind of see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and that was my, and let me give you guys a little bit more insight too. Like me and T grew all the way up. We from the kindergarten, you know what I'm saying? You feel me? His mother and father still stay a street over, a literal street, one street over from the house I grew up in, from my grandmother's house.
Oh, wow.
So we've known each other that long. He's older than me. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? Like all the brothers, they like 3 years older than me. So I'm the baby in Goody Mob.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But my sister graduated in their class. Did my sister graduate with
them? 1 year behind.
1 year behind. Okay,
oh, wow.
The next class of 90, she was 91, and I'm 93.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But he was right about Joe. You know what I'm saying? Like, Joe, I don't know if Joe wanted me to say it, but like, Joe was voted most attractive. You know what I'm saying? And we called our high school, we called Benjamin E. Mays the Hill because it does literally sit on like Stone Mountain on a big hill.
Right.
So it's like the hill. So a lot of stories and folklore and tall tales were coming down off the hill. And his story was legendary in the neighborhood. Whether I was just reminding Gibb. Now, Joe probably is always impressed that I noticed, you know, like it was like a famous fight with Zoc. Yeah. Now Zoc was a sorority kind of gang. Atlanta was like a little Warriors too. It was like little gangs. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? Little high school gangs, and they had the with the Greek lettering like Zoc. You know what I'm saying? I just remember seeing him in the mall and like, you know what I'm saying, or whatever. But I apparently he fought all of them one night by himself, and that was a great story because at the hill, Southwest Westminster Park. You know what I'm saying? Which was across the street from my grandmother's house. People would if you cut school to go there. Or after the football games, people would go there to fight. So it was like the outsiders too, like Pony Boy and Dallas. And
right.
You know what I mean? So that kind of stuff. So I would hear stories about him, and I was also a younger, you know what I'm saying? But I was making my name too. You know what I'm saying? You feel me?
so it's crazy that, and then me and 3000, we met in the third grade. So I've been knowing him that long.
You know what I mean? Wow.
And it was a homeboy of mine that we got to holler out Killer B and JD, rest in peace, JD. Oh, they were homies out the neighborhood. They were like some of the first hustlers.
Okay.
You know, out of the neighborhood. And they put money on it. Like, they was managing me at one time, but it was all like friends and partners too. You know what I'm saying? And they was the first, they were the first ones to play me the Lumberjacks demo. So it was a record called Booyak the Sack. You know what I mean? Produced by Mixo. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it was a strange sound. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and it sounded like Lumberjack. And a lot of the slang they was using, you know what I mean, like, was just completely different. You know what I mean? But I just associated the two things with the stories I heard from him as a real live person. But then as an MC, I'm like, damn, that's Cool Joe. You know, but I might have would have said that's Willie. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, like, that's what my sister would be like, Willie Knight, Willie Knight. <You know? laughs> Cujo the Dreamboat. But he was also like a real live Roadhouse brawler. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, so I love that too. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? But it's a long story, man. But we just known each other so long, but not in a musical capacity. You know what I'm saying? Like, I knew of Gip because Gip was very unique looking. You know what I'm saying? Like, and to signify himself, Gip wore all silver when gold was the thing. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? So I remember having
Everybody else was wearing gold, you was wearing silver.
Yep. So that was his thing. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? Like, he might have been one of the first cats to have a car, too. Like, they had the Isuzu Trooper.
I used to love that damn car. I wanted one of them shit so bad, I didn't know what to do.
So he rolled around in the Trooper, you know what I'm saying? Like, and Gip was like, you know, like, we just, like, he looked like a, you know, like a, like a, you know, somebody just different. You know what I'm saying? Like, you feel me? We knew. Early on, he had some type of sense of himself.
Right.
And the way that he wanted to, you know, like, be distinguished. And that you could respect, you know what I'm saying? You know, but it was B and JD who brought me to the dungeon. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, but I ended up bumping. I'm like, gee, Joe, yeah, what y'all doing over here? Mm-hmm. You know, but then I knew Dre them from school. And when we were in school one day, they were like, we met these guys called Organized Noise. You know what I'm saying? You know, and I had met them. I'm like, cool, you know, because I was with a crew called the GA Style at that time, and we was trying to hook them. Anyway, I try not to talk so much.
No, that's anyway, okay, brother. Keep on talking. People anyway, are interested in this.
So anyway, we at Greenbrier Mall, and a homeboy of mine named Fat Keith was at the payphone. Marquez Etheridge, who ended up writing Waterfall.
Right.
And I recognized his face because, they, you know, the little headshots, the little promotional pictures that people send out. They were in a group called the U-Boys. I recognized his face from a picture. And I don't know how my homeboy Fat Keith knew him, but he was like, hey, Marquez. He's like, yo, my homeboy's singing. He raps. So we stepped outside the mall. I sung and I rapped for him. He said, I like your singing better than your rapping. I'm like, cool, I can do both. And I was like, you feel me? So he said, actually, I was on the phone trying to call over to the dungeon. But nobody picking up the phone. He said, I'm sure they there, but they probably just can't hear because of the music. And he was like, shit, you need a ride over there? So we ended up taking him over there that night. And I end up singing and rapping for Sleepy Brown. He said, I like your singing, you know what I'm saying, better than your rap. I said, cool, I can do both. then Rico walks in. Mm-hmm. They were just coming from getting something to eat. So he walked in with Dre and Big. And Dre was like, man, that's CeeLo who I was telling you about. That's the homeboy do all the story raps. So all I did was story raps around that time.
You know what I'm
saying? So I rapped for Rico, too. And I instantly felt like... it was home, but then later, at a later time, B and JD brought me back. And I'm saying, we had the same, I said, I've been over here before.
Right.
That nigga can't manage me.
Hey, let me tell you how hard this dude is, though. Let me tell you how hard home is. He's so hard. Back when we were starting at the dungeon, man, I was like a writing crazy person, man. I would write on so much stuff, had so many writes. We'd come over there with probably a stack of papers with just so many raps. On Cujo had so many raps. I never forget this. He had big, thick book. I said, what you got in there, Lo? Man, he opened that thing. It was dead bone empty. He had nothing. But I tell you what, this was dope about it, though. The first right rap that I think he wrote in that book, if I'm not mistaken, I may be wrong. See, was it the one you did, the one for the, you got the rap of the month?
Yep. Get out. I had bought the notebook, you know what I'm saying? But at the time, I would just write titles. I would just, I have titles came to me quicker than songs. And I would just write, get Empty page. Here go a title. That's a good title, though. It's going to mean something one of these days. But Joe was dope, too, because, like, you know, his aesthetic was dope. And I will say this, like, you know what I mean? Let it be known, man. Like, everybody felt like Cujo was the best. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Cujo's style was, he might write a rap. I seen him have a roll of toilet tissue with raps on it. And just, you know, reading off raps off that. I seen him take the bag off his 40-ounce, or his Deuce Coke 45, and write a rhyme on the brown bag. You know, all kind of different stuff that was just so unique to notice out of your peripheral vision.
Right.
Like, hey, he's something else. You know what I mean? You
feel me? He ain't playing with it.
No, but I knew the other side of him, too. And that's the side I wanted to, you know, I wanted to, you know, make an impression on that side of him. So one time, you know, we like, man, we going to beer run. We're going to the liquor store or whatever. So we ended up going to get some 40s or whatever from the studio. And we was at another studio that day, too, at Ralph and Ed X studio, another little joint, before we even got to the dungeon. And we was in the Cutlass Supreme. So the liquor store is right in front of Kmart. You know, so like, man, let's stop up in this Kmart. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? Back then, you know, you only had... You think about songs like I Got Five on it, man. Like, everybody was broke. That's a broke song.
That's a broke-ass
song. That's
why
it was so real. Because think about how pathetic that is. We going in on nicks. When I got $2 on it, man, you know, we going in on nickel bags of weed. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So anyway, we ain't had no money, so you know what it was. We going to Kmart just trying to test each other, man. I just wanted to let him know I was all the way down. You know what I'm saying? You know, so I stole a book bag. He stole some drawers. You know, but that was our bun off to the side.
Right.
You feel me? But then,
and it all really kind of started for you guys. Like, it was really the love of hip hop. It was really music.
Yeah.
It was really the love of the music more, because there was no money. None of us had no damn money.
And you know, the first person that ever signed the Chain Gang was Easy Lee.
Really?
Easy Lee. He was the first one to give me a check.
Around the way.
At his house. And that was the first place that I saw a skate at Easy Lee house.
Oh, wow. Wow. So the music just that everybody was connected in some kind of way.
Easy Lee was Kumo D's DJ.
Yes, he was. That's my man, DJ Easy Lee. Everybody is connected in some kind of way with each other. Somebody knew somebody. Somebody knew somebody else and said, hey, this dude... Do this, this dude do that, this dude want to do this. Oh, this is the guy that wrote for TLC. Y'all knew TLC too, though, back in the days too. So everybody knew somebody. What was that vibe like coming from where you guys were coming from when it just wasn't about anything but music? It wasn't about money. It wasn't about shit.
Right. Hey, man, that was an awesome time, man, because I think that a lot of musicians are more creative in that infancy stage, you feel what I'm saying? Because it's way innocent then, you feel what I'm saying? Because I can remember in middle school, the New Edition came to my school, and Houdini came to my school, and Curtis Blow came to my school. And that's when we playing basketball was coming out, and Friends. When I seen that, I was like, oh, man, I want to do that. So we came up with a group called Party Crashers in middle school. And it just led from there on into high school, on into after high school, into something else, because it was nothing down here in Georgia but music that you play in the strip clubs, you know what I'm saying? Then with Luke, then with Miami Bass, who said Magic Mike, you know what I'm saying? All those, but to be able to, man, write something and hear your voice, that was the thing. Hearing your voice, because at first I had a little baby voice, you know what I'm talking about, man, like, you know, some shit like that. But the shit got deeper and deeper and deeper, and I was like, man, whoa, what is this? So it was just advancing in different stages of our life, man, where it was like, man, this music thing, this is what it is. This bonds everybody. This crosses over color barriers, ethnic barriers, because, I mean, we in Germany. We all over the world, man. Some people can't even speak English, but still vibing to the music. You know what I'm saying? So it started with the music first, man. That's what everything. It starts with that music first.
Were you always, well, they done said your name a million times, Willie Knight. Willie Knight, the one the girls like. Were you always Cujo?
No.
Who were you before Cujo? I'm going to ask all of y'all the same question.
Well, my nickname, Sud. That's what my grandmama, my mama, that's what my family.
Where did Sud come from?
Well, Sud come from when my daddy and my uncle was drinking beer. And when he popped the bitch, he said, hey, I heard you had another stud, man. I heard you had a stud. So that's where that came from, man.
Okay.
And then Big Will, that's from playing football at Mays High. Called me Big Will. And then I had that name for a minute.
But you was rapping under Big Will?
Was I rapping under Big Will, Gil? Yeah.
You still knockout specialist, dude.
I went through Kid MC. Man. Wee Poppers. That was another. Mr. Cujo and the Wee Poppers. Those were. Yeah, man, that's what's up, man.
Mr. Cujo and the Wee Poppers.
Wee Poppers, though. We pop them. We pop them.
Yeah.
We pop them. And Cujo, man, now that's something kind of different. Because at first, I had heard of this guy named Cujo. He was a maroon. And it was back in the days, in the slavery days, where this guy escaped from the plantation, gathered a whole bunch of other slaves, and they go back to the plantation, steal food, kill the master, do whatever they got to do.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, well, damn, they got a movie called Cujo, and I just like, well, man, white folk probably swapped that thing out and made it into a dog.
Right.
You feel what I'm saying? So I was just trying to use something in my name, which my last name is Knighton. So I was just trying to be creative, man, for a minute, but Cujo just stuck with me.
Okay.
Cujo Goody just stuck with me.
T-Mo, always been T-Mo?
Nah, I started off, I wanted to be T-Mo Smooth.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So I went from T-Mo Smooth, you know, to Ice Cold T.
Ice Cold T.
Like, I wanted to be Ice T, but it was already Ice T.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So much respect to him. Mm-hmm. But I was trying to figure out, because everybody called me T-Boo, and I refused for that to be my name. That was a nickname that was given to me on the bus.
Okay.
I used to get, you know, jumped on by the bigger boys sometimes. They might give me a wedgie and all that type of stuff. Man, I got it. I ain't gonna even lie, I guarantee you, none of y'all could have stopped it either. It made me who I am today, though. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it just, the name stuck with me, T-Boo, but then the T-Mo Smooth, just, I chopped the smooth part off because I felt like we were rugged. Me and Cujo were rugged and raw. We were rugged. We were lumberjacks. You know, living, like you say, in the traps, writing raps, you know what I mean, doing what we did every day, you know, traveling down the streets, you know, getting respect from everybody. So the smooth part, you know, I chopped it off and with just T-Mo. And then when we figured out who we were as a group and as who what our responsibility was to hip-hop, I put Goody on the end of it, T-Mo Goody.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That's how I've been.
C-Lo. Always been C-Lo, brother?
No, I had one other name. You know what I'm saying? I had an alter ego, and his name was Rallo. That's it. But now we got a young Rallo out there today. I kind of grin about that to myself, man, because I don't know if people ever knew. But the only time it's ever been mentioned or recorded was I had to do a clean edit to Get Up, Get Out, and that's the only time I ever said, Rallo, you supposed to be grown. That's it.
Right. How about you, Gip? Always been Gip. Always been Big Gip. How many names you went through, brother?
One. It was Chaos first, spelled with a K, and then I just, you know. One day I was talking to my pop and he was like, I was like, man, I don't know what I'm gonna name myself. He was like, shit, what your last name is? And I was like, Gip. He said, you that. And I was like,
just that simple, huh?
That's
right,
bro.
Just that simple, Big Gip. Just that simple. Hey, yo, sometimes those things happen, man. I had the audition for UMTV Raps coming up. And I went upstairs. My mom's in the kitchen cooking. I'll forget this. And she said, have you figured out a name to tell them people when you go in there? I said, yeah, I'm going to go with Ed the Lover, because I was talking to this chick. And I don't know. I was on some anti-fucking girlfriend shit at the time. Yeah. And I'm talking to her, and I'm talking to her cousin at the same time. And she on the phone with me, and she's like, Ed, I can't stand you. You swear you're a lover. And I was like, I am a lover. I'm Ed the Lover. Fuck you. And click the phone on her. You remember when you used to be able to hang that fucking phone up on somebody? Yeah, you were banging in their ear?
Okay.
They can hear that shit loud and clear. I banged the phone on her. So when I went upstairs, my mother said, well, what name are you going to use? And I said, I think I'm going to go with Ed the Lover. And my mother was like, no, I don't like that verb. The. Just take the out, because Ed Lover sounds like that could really be somebody's name.
Yeah.
So you should just go with Ed Lover. I just went with Ed Lover because my mama said so. And the rest is history. So sometimes, you know, somebody older than you and smarter than you can see something that you can't see. Mm-hmm. and they give you something, and you take it, and shit, my mom made history out of that name, man.
That's funny.
Edward.
Edwin.
Edwin.
Okay. Edwin.
Edwin. That's funny. You just reminded me, like, you know, the other times when you can hang up on somebody, man. I don't know if y'all did this in that, on the East Coast, but down here we used to do this. You remember this? Hey, you want to talk to my retarded cousin right quick? Who's your retarded cousin? Hold on, here you go.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We used to hit it with, hey, your refrigerator running? Like, you better go catch.
Oh, man, so all the time, man. Yeah, man. Oh, that's back in the days when we all had the answering machines.
Absolutely.
And you spent a whole lot of time hitting that pause button trying to create the best thing that you can create that little ass tape on that answer machine. That's so somebody was going to be entertained when they called my phone that I wasn't home.
It's crazy that we're sitting here with you, man, because I was just surfing on YouTube the other day, and I was just looking at all the that last when UMT Raps was going off air, and everybody from Rakim to Redman, Eric Sermon, like everybody was freestyling.
Yeah, yes. Damn. MC Search. And,
yeah, Search.
Yeah, KRS-One was there, man. That was an epic show, and that was a bittersweet show because we really, at UMT Raps, wanted to try to get 10 years in. But hip-hop was changing, and hip-hop had become mainstream MTV at the time, and MTV just didn't see a reason to keep that specialty kind of show around. But they didn't understand, but we understood that we were breaking brand-new artists. We were introducing artists to the world. And while doing that, we were introducing, via the artists, what was going on in their community. You know, we in New York, we don't know what the fuck is going on in Atlanta.
Right.
We have no idea the vibe or the music or anything that was going on. Nobody knew what was going on the West Coast. We didn't know what Compton was. We didn't know what Compton was like. Right.
That's why we wanted to tell our story, man.
Right.
Because we listening to great artists like that and telling those stories. We was doing the art of storytelling, didn't even know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Just really putting this down of what we go through every day. Because we was like, well, we can't be like people in New York. We can't do like the folk in California.
That was conscious.
Yeah.
You consciously said we can't do that.
Yep. We consciously said that. We can't do that, man.
Because Biden was outlawed. Right. That's how you feel.
Yes, sir.
Right.
No, sir. That's why it drives me crazy so many times if I hear so many of these groups, and I have to even ask my kids, who is that?
Right.
Because they sound like the same person that would just rap, and nobody, you didn't bite. You didn't do it. Fat Five Freddy had an MTV ring, and I thought that MTV ring was so dope, and I just went and I said, well, I can't buy that,
because
Fab got one. So I got a bubble. I got my jeweler to make me the bubble for Yo MTV Raps, the bubble, and my MTV had diamonds on it, and it said Yo MTV Raps, because I couldn't do what Fab was doing.
Right.
And Yo Gotti knocked yours off. He put the Yo in the Gotti.
Yeah. Yeah, you couldn't do the same thing. So consciously, whatever music was influencing y'all at the time, y'all was like, we can't do that.
Can't do that, man. Can't do that.
How did y'all become so conscious? Because that wasn't what was happening.
I'm saying listening to everybody else's stuff got us to be who we are today. You feel what I'm saying? Because, I mean, titles like Soul Food, you know what I'm saying? What region of the country would that come from but the South?
That's right.
You feel what I'm saying? Dirty South. You feel what I'm saying? Cell Therapy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, songs like that, we was greatly influenced by other regions. Like I said, Naughty by Nature, Cypress Hill. I mean, our first time going to New York, the dude thought I was Tretch. He thought he was Vinny.
Right.
And dude's like, hey, Tretch, come into my store. Come. I was like, she was like, man, go on in there. I was like, you better have a great deal in here, man. Right. He's like, Tretch. You feel what I'm saying? So, man, we used to listen to all those people up in the day, man. All that, man. So that's how we got to be conscious, by listening to other people and not doing the same thing they did. So that actually challenged us. It challenged us to do things. It challenged us to write rhymes, because we was writing verses over 16 bars.
Were you?
Yes, the first songs, what, four albums? I mean, four, five long, songs?
8 minutes long.
Man, those songs were long, man. And I gotta salute Organized North, because they let us do it, man.
Yeah.
They let us go for what we know.
I think it was definitely that allowance. And I think that it was also a bit of naivete. You know what I mean? Like we just didn't really know what was format. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Like, you know. And then we to go back to consciousness, like, you know, I just got through talking to Pots, like, you know, Pots the News from De La Soul, and you just made me think, you know, of how I was so greatly influenced by the native tongue. I mean, like, whether it was De La Soul,
Tribe Called Quest,
Jungle Brothers, Done by the Forces of Nature is one of my favorite albums. And I had a lot of time to listen to it when it came out, you know what I mean? Because I was in military school. Me and T both at separate times went to Riverside Military Academy in Gainesville, Georgia.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, I mean, sitting, you know, with your headphones at your radio, like, you know, that was real, and you know, that was real critical, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, self-discovery at that time. You know what I mean? I can even go as far back to King Son, Lakim Shabazz,
wow.
You know, stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, what it means to be black. The whole black movement. You know
right, X-Klan.
X-Klan.
Public Enemy.
Yeah. Oh, we've man, that was my
we favorite. From class of 90.
Yeah.
Us three, we from class of 93, so we all from the 90s. When that goddamn Feel for Black Planet came out, man, let me tell you something. It sold out. This how serious that record was. I cut school to go to Peppermint to get my copy because though. After the school, they were gone. It sold out. That's how much love we had for New York hip-hop. Y'all don't understand, like, that's all we had back then that was really selling.
Right.
And we would go to that Peppermint, man, and buy that stuff as soon as it dropped, man. Public,
it was either Peppermint or Superstar.
Superstar.
Peppermint
was
in the mall, and Superstar was in a strip mall.
Okay.
You know, we got to holler at Theo there, man. Like, you know, like, that's the OG in the neighborhood, his record store. And I remember, that's funny, I got a story about that, too. Like, you know, but it's Public Enemy, too. I was working at a balloon shop in Greenbrier Mall. And with my first few little dollars, I walked across the street and I bought the 12-inch for my for Rebel Without a Call, Rebel Without a Pause, and my Uzi Wears a Ton was on the
yes, sir.
Side, you know
yeah.
And it was all of them in this parking deck. It was a picture. They all had on the triple Fat Goose, V-bombers.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? In front of the whole 98
Posse. The 98 Posse
you know,
was running.
The homies had a pistol. So I'm like, damn, they on some gangster shit, but it's still conscience. Like, I didn't really know what Public Enemy was, but I was fascinated with them and maybe Flavor's voice too, or maybe the juxtaposition between him and Chuck.
Right.
But Rebel Without a Pause, oh my God.
Rebel Without a Pause was so important to me. I had Rebel Without a Pause with my boy. Me and my boy laugh all the time because we were Radio Raheem before Spike Lee made Do the Right Thing.
Right.
We had Rebel Without a Pause on a 90-minute Maxell. You remember those Maxell tapes?
Yeah.
It was 45. It was a 90-minute tape. 45 minutes on one side, 45 minutes on the other side.
Right.
The only thing that was on that tape was Rebel Without a Pause.
Wow.
And we would play the lyrics, then the instrumental, then the lyrics, then the instrumental.
Yeah,
then,
yeah.
And whenever the instrumental came on, we would rhyme. And then we play this shit, all walking around drinking 40s all day playing Rebel Without a Pause all fucking day.
That Bomb Squad production.
Yes,
just
sir.
So psychedelic. Yeah. It was so nerve-wracking. I'm saying, like, you know, but invigorating and just compelling and mesmerizing.
Chuck told me one time they did it on purpose. They wanted it to be noisy. They didn't want to make music, he said, that girls liked. He said, we made rebel music.
No doubt.
We made stadium bangers. He said, we watched Run DMC and them, and we had to make big, loud. We didn't want girls to like our music.
Right.
He said, so we made it noisy and dysfunctional as possible.
I want to say that true. I want to just since we're talking, this is going to be current. I think we've mentioned this in maybe some interviews prior, before. But that true collective consciousness. And I got to shout out to the God, Busta Rhymes. You know what I'm saying, like, who I was a big fan of at the time, and he just happened to be working next door in the studio from us, and you know he not barged in, but your brothers. You know what I'm saying, like. Check this out. I got this piece of literature. You know what I'm saying? No disrespect. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm done with it. I just want to pass this knowledge on, God. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, bless y'all and what y'all doing. And, you know, this, that, and the third. You know what I'm saying? So we've always been befriended since the beginning. He gave us Behold a Pale Horse. Big Rule read it first. Everybody read it in the dungeon. And we all lived at the dungeon at the time.
Right.
So that book went around. So either he would be reading in the chair. You know what I'm saying? Like, somebody might go out and sit on the front steps and read it. And that we were just like, wow. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? Like, wow.
Right.
And basically, it blew our minds.
Were you guys surprised by the success of your first album?
I was.
I think we were surprised because at that time, I think it just took a longer time for records to do what they did back then. Uh-huh. So, it, you know, you put more work in to make those records big. And we were surprised. And, you know, I talk about this all the time. It was like, once we went on tour with the Roots and the Fugees, with the Roots and the Fugees, I think in the middle of that tour is when we all start recognizing a change in you know, what we were to the actual game.
Who was opening the tour?
We were.
Y'all were the opening act, yeah. And the Fugees were headlining?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and it was like, I remember, we got halfway through the tour, man, and they dropped that Killing Me Softly. And we walked into the dressing room, and Wyclef. Yeah.
At the lunch table.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
That was his exact word. Is it? And that's when that record did so big, that's when we had some type of gauge on what true success was, because I didn't really know what success was. I thought we were successful in, you know, because we were all namesakes in our city. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like we weren't lame, but square or none.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we, you know, we was all out here, as they say. So in terms of music, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that was something very organic.
But that had
organic
to,
let's and, go back and to unassuming.
All you guys being namesakes in your city already. When you guys came together, dropped Soul Food, the shit blew the fuck up. It had to fuck everybody up. Because to a certain degree, I was all in the streets.
No doubt. And it was because of the content that was very perplexing to people. You know what I'm saying?
Because they would expect you four to do trap.
Right.
To talk about the trap.
Right.
And you stayed away from it.
Well, we had
it was a little sprinkle of it in there. And I would say thought process for me. It was thought process in Sesame Street.
Right.
But the type of trapology that people are out here doing now, it's actually, niggas is actually trapping on records. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm selling dope and I got my plug here and plug here. It wasn't like that. You feel what I'm saying? Because it was more than that, man. It was just that a nigga was trying to make money on his own. You feel what I'm saying? Tax-free, but still, you still got to deal with these your folk you selling dope to.
Right.
You feel what I'm saying? You got to deal with, damn, nigga, I went to school with you, man. I ain't finna sell you no dope, nigga. Oh, come on, Willie. Give me that damn dope. Give it to me. Shit like that. You feel what I'm saying? The shit pimp talk about. Like, man, if you going to talk about this dope shit, man, you talk about the bad side and the good side.
Say, man.
You feel what I'm saying? So that's not happening now. You feel what I'm saying? So I don't think that that's real trap. You feel music to me. I felt like being in the trap, I was trapped. You feel what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I was trapped. I don't have a job. You feel what I'm saying? Police can come here anytime. Nigga can come up here anytime, busting it across his head. Mm-hmm. All that type of stuff. But we kind of stayed. It was plenty of shit we could have did. I mean, we done had a big wig come to us and asked us, man, y'all don't get y'all dick sucked, man?
Mm.
Yeah, like, of course we do, but we supposed to rap about this shit? I mean, shit, Luke was doing that shit already.
Right.
You feel what I'm saying? So we couldn't bite off Luke like that. But that shit blew me away.
That's what he wanted
shit.
You to rap about?
Man, he just asked
us because he was afraid of us. In so many words, or just perplexed by us, like, you guys are so serious all the time. And he said it in a joking way. You know what I'm
right.
saying? Like,
right.
He was keeping it real. I could respect his transparency. You know what I'm saying? But, like, yeah, that's exactly
I had never
what
heard,
said.
I mean, never heard that before like that. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you said, it was a serious gesture, but it was an insinuation type thing. Like, man, come on, man. Mm-hmm. And today, then that's when I think we put the World Party out.
Okay.
World Party album.
Today's music, man, I mean, with the trapping, man, and all of that, man, like, that ain't real trapping, man. That's fed music.
That's getting indicted music, huh?
Yeah, man. That's a sting, man.
But the thing is, why when we do music, why we had to feel like we had to come out and be dope dealers and then to establish some type of realness.
Right.
You feel what I'm saying? Whereas we did our thing, came out, and we established this type of realness. You feel what I'm saying? Where a nigga can rap about, I got to go to the grocery store. I got the grocery list I got to fill out. I got to do all this shit. That type of stuff. You feel what I'm saying? Real storytelling type shit. So why is it in our genre of music, we had to be coming out, oh, yeah, nigga, I kill a nigga ass. Or, nigga, I'm getting 17.5, or I'm just naming shit out of my head because that's what I hear, you know what I'm saying? But I can't fault them because if that's all you know, that's all you know. But you got OGs around where you can ask questions like that, but this is not the type of field where niggas feel like they can ask the older generation questions because they think, oh, y'all niggas just ain't got money. I got some money. So guess what? I'm doing the right thing. But it ain't necessarily so. Just because you're making money, you think you're doing the right thing.
So you're making money, but at what cost?
Right.
And that's the irony of it.
You're at the cost of your community. You feel what I'm saying? You're dragging your community. You feel what I'm saying? If it was up to me, I would love old school hip hop all day. Old school R&B all day. You feel what I'm saying? Because it sounds like niggas actually cared about people back then. You feel what I'm saying? But now, it's like, nigga, I go in here, I get a deal, a nigga throw me $5 million on the table, guess what? I'm keep making the same music.
Yeah, at any cost.
At any cost.
At any cost. And it's also to the point where, as far as they're looked up to because they're making money,
right.
And we opened the door for you to make the money.
No doubt.
We had to me, the difference is now is we love the music. The music came first to us. The money came secondary.
Right.
Now it's like the money comes first and the music comes secondary. So if I could say this shit, even if I've never lived it, even if I didn't do it, if I could say this shit and get a hit record and I can make this money, that's all it's about to me. And I don't give a fuck about nothing else.
The money was a byproduct of quality. You know what I'm saying? You mean, as opposed to a government-funded agenda. I feel like they doubling and tripling up the payment, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Like, the pay rate, you know what I'm saying? Like, to widen that communication gap. You know what I'm saying? You feel me?
Yes, sir.
And to cause dissension and disconnect and disrespect, you know what I mean? Like, you feel me? Toward the elders and toward the forefathers and the architects who built it, you know what I'm saying? Who built the business model.
Absolutely. And if you don't know, and if you're a kid and you growing up and you don't know, and this is just my opinion, I've said this a million times, I feel like that goes all the way across the board, especially with the first thing they did was snatch it out of the schools.
Right.
So if you take it out of the schools and you're not teaching them, then they're not going to respect what comes before that.
Right.
Right, so if they don't respect it, then you widen that gap by giving them more money. Look at you. You got money. Don't listen to them. They ain't make no money the way you making money. And then that's further dissension. That's further spreading everything apart. And then you don't respect it. And then now you're making music about how you don't even respect yourself. You don't respect your women. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is a nigga that you can shoot.
Right.
But that doesn't happen to you. It trickles down to your community because your community. Music is such a fucking influence.
That's right.
No doubt.
It is, right? Music is so influential that we can all think of songs that put us absolutely like in. And if I hear Peabo Bryson, I'm so into you, I remember exactly what girl I was in love with when that song came out.
Exactly.
You understand what I mean? I remember exactly. The music makes you feel something. So if you keep feeding somebody negativity, and I believe that this is being done on purpose.
That's what I'm saying.
You keep feeding them negativity, they're going to turn around and be negative towards each other. Because when you guys were out, when Public Enemy was out, when X-Clan was out, when Queen Latifah was out, the Fugees was out. We called each other brother. What's up, my brother? How you doing? I love your album, my brother. Keep on doing your thing, brother. Now it's fuck that nigga. Fuck this nigga. Fuck this nigga. If this nigga say the wrong shit to me, I'll kill him. But it's not the artists that are doing it. That trickles down to the community, and the young dudes feel that way about each other.
And there's a number of ironies, you know, to consider. Let's say, the golden era of hip hop. I mean, like, you know, 50% of the ownership was already defaulted due to the sampling.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So we didn't have as much equity, you know what I'm saying, like, as assumed. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Like, you know, prior to us learning the game. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't realize we had to pay for the samples. It wasn't until the big lawsuit with Biz Markie.
That's right.
Remember?
With Simon and Garfunkel.
Absolutely. So that's when the game changed.
Changed the whole game.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know, and so that's one thing I can say constructive about the generation. It is original. And see, it's kind of hard to call it music because I believe that it qualifies more as original content.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, because content is shelf space and time slot. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know,
right.
Like, you feel me? Because more or less some of these songs are commercials for the drugs that they're promoting.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like I don't know if it's a song or a commercial.
Right.
You kind of see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but what was ironic about that, like, it ended up being more expensive, so therefore we lost by default, you know, more money and ownership, you know what I'm saying, like, in our arts and crafts and culture. But we were sampling our mother's and father's music, and it kept the bridge, you know what I'm saying, like, and it kept, it allowed our eldership, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, to run concurrent with the way that we were growing.
Yeah.
We were taking...
It's like a good-ass throwback jersey.
Yeah.
You know, when throwbacks were hot, throwbacks, I always liked it because a throwback would make a young person go, well, who is Wes Unseld?
Right.
Why am I wearing a Wes Unseld jersey? And then they would go and look up and see who Wes Unseld was. It made you go, okay, welcome to the Mardi Gras is shit, but they sample who the fuck is Bob James?
Right.
And then you go back and look at Bob James because you were trying to get into hip-hop and you found Nautilus or you found something else that Bob James did and you took a little piece of it.
Right.
It made something. It made you want to explore who Gene Karn was. It
Absolutely.
Made you want to know who's Curtis Mayfield
right.
and who's Isaac Hayes. And that Biggie Warning, what is that?
Right.
That's Isaac Hayes, Walk On By. Let me go listen to this record. You know what I mean? And then you still got a lot of DJs
and
nowadays.
Then if
they'll
you go
do
find that version of Walk On By, you might bump into Dionne Warwick's original
That's
version
right.
Of Walk
and
On
you might
By.
Want to take something. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And there you have music education.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. You guys came out, man, and because of the sound that you guys did you realize that was a Dirty South sound, that was the staple for what the Dirty South supposed to sound like?
Not necessarily, because there was it was fusion. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we just felt like, you know, we come from a city that had civil rights activists, very famed and accomplished, also Black bands of that time, from Cameo to Brick to SOS Band.
Oh, my God. I looked up the Cameos.
You know, me too. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh,
you know,
my God.
I can call Larry Blackman right now.
Hell yeah, man. Idols. I remember. Yeah. I came down to Jack the Rapper Man. I was in a band. I played trumpet. Mm. And I came to Jack the Rapper Man looking for a deal. This had to be like 84, 85.
Wow.
And we saw Larry Blackman, man. And we, you know, I was an album reader, liner reader.
Right.
I knew everybody who played every fucking thing. I could tell you who... Jerry Hay arranged the horns on whatever. You know, I was crazy like that. Mm. And we ran into Larry Blackman, man. I was like, Lord have mercy. That was like seeing God for me.
He's unsung, man. Like, he's really one of the best. I wish somebody would do a documentary on him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But the point that you made, even when you say you play trumpet, I always say that, you know, you could pretend to be a drug kingpin on a rap record, but you can't pretend to play the guitar.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so therefore, that is a trade. So live musicianship is trade. You know what I mean? You feel me? And that's what Organized Noise personified. They made trade applicable to pots and pans and boom bap. You know what I'm saying? You feel me?
Yes,
and
sir.
And it was a blend, so it could be appreciated by the elders who actually knew the trade. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it employed those individuals too, who were just kind of at our disposal and accessible to us, but who weren't necessarily working. You know what I'm saying? You feel me?
Yeah.
You know, but you infuse a bass guitar, you infuse a trumpet with the soul, the breath of your being.
That's
right.
You feel
me? Like,
hell yeah.
Like, so it like, you know, it ends up being miraculous, like, you know what I mean? Like, in a very modern and casual way, domestic way. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? But, you know, I'll say that the music of the day, trapping, sound like more like Dirty South music to me. So
yeah.
I love the production. Don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah, me
I
too.
Love production.
Love it.
I love drums.
Love it.
I love 808. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I love the let me say this.
They're actually going back and starting to sample 90s music now.
That's what's dope. You know what I'm saying? You
feel
me?
Yeah, I love it.
And that's cool. Like, who would have never known that, you know, we'd be old enough to be wise. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, like Two Live Crew when we was younger, I was turned out by Two Live Crew. You know what I mean? Like, I was a little deviant. I got kicked out. I used to go to Christian private school. Man, I got kicked out for taking the Move Summer album cover to school.
Wow.
I didn't see nothing wrong with it. You know what I'm saying? Just an album cover.
It was a borderline, man.
Put your ass on this album cover, man.
Two Live Crew was borderline South Point.
Absolutely.
I'm young, but I understand.
Luke was the man. Somebody needs to do a Luke movie, because I read Luke's book, man. Somebody needs to do a movie on that dude. That dude was probably one of the greatest entrepreneurs that I've
ever
met in my life. I remember coming down to, man, to Jack the Rapper, man, where I didn't even have a deal. And Luke befriending us, man, and Luke letting us come. And the way Luke got his records played was so classic. Luca bringing all the program directors in the room, right. About 30, 40 strippers in there.
Yes,
and you best believe they're going to play that motherfucking Luke record the next time when he
put
it in.
Speaking of Luca Too Loud Crew, man, I just want to acknowledge, man, Fresh Kid Ice. I was actually in Miami at the time and I went to his funeral.
Oh, wow.
I got a chance to, you know, bump into Luke. Luke has been a good friend of ours for years, man. Luke was at my wedding reception, man. So, like, you know, it's crazy, man. Like, we good friends with so many other guys,
yeah,
man.
That's that is a beautiful thing, man. How much did the record company give y'all for Soul Food to record it?
$20,000.
Are you kidding me?
That's what we got in our pocket.
It was about 20 grand.
We got $5,000 a piece.
Yeah. Y'all got $5,000 a piece.
Yes.
We burned it up in 2 days.
I thought I was rich, man. I moved out the house with $5,000.
You did?
Yeah. Well, actually, with $4,000. With $4,100, man. I spent as soon as I got that check, I spent $900 on a grill. I went
did
to
you?
Eddie's Gold Teeth in Five Points. Downstairs in the basement.
You know where that dude is from?
He's from New York.
He's from New York. Yeah, I bought my first gold teeth from Eddie's
Gold. Yeah, he did flavor. Oh, yeah. Just Ice first grill.
Eddie's Gold Caps at Jamaica Avenue in Queens in the Coliseum Mall.
That's where I got my first grill, my first single gold tooth up there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, sir.
125th Mark.
Yeah, Eddie was in Queens. Eddie gave me one when I had the underscore on the other side. I didn't have two. I had one. I couldn't afford both of them. I got one. And then Eddie came down here and started a revolution, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Boy. Everybody buy gold from that boy.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, how have you guys managed through all the years to do separate projects and still remain the Goody Mob at the same time with no bullshit?
Man, I think, man, your fans gonna continue to let you be who you be. I don't care. I can go out anywhere in Atlanta. I mean, I could look like the ugliest nigga on the planet. Nigga come up behind me.
Hey, what's up, Cujo?
Yeah. Like, damn. you can't hide from it. You feel what I'm saying? So, but I'm glad it's like that because of the material that we put out. You feel what I'm saying? We actually tried to help our people, man, through this music. We actually tried that. And with the music that we do, sometimes it's kind of hard to go off task, and that might kind of suppress you from doing music at that time right now. Mm-hmm. And I read an article with 3000. He's like, man, I'm ready to retire, man. He's like, I'm ready to retire, this and that, but I can feel where he's coming from because he's done so much in so little time.
Mm-hmm.
You feel what I'm saying? Whereas we still got a long way to go because, shit, our three albums just not going platinum.
Oh, wow.
You feel what I'm saying? So it's like, what's the deal? You feel what I'm saying? Well, why is it just not going platinum? But like I say, your fans are not gonna let you live down. You the Goody Mob. I don't give a damn how old you are, and they're going to be pressing you. Are you going to make new music? When y'all going to come out with something new? You got an album you're coming out with? So I think in some capacity, man, music is still in our blood. It's just that what medium we gonna release it out on now.
Okay.
You feel me? Because you gotta be so political in this thing right now. You feel what I'm saying? And I feel like I'm not politically correct. You feel what I'm saying? And I'm not finna conform to be politically correct because the people that came before me, they weren't politically correct. You feel what I'm saying? P.E., he wasn't politically correct.
Right.
Big Daddy Kane, he wasn't politically correct.
The mark of a true artist,
you feel what I'm saying? So it's like, nah. So if you don't like me being politically incorrect, go do some other music or listen to something else because this is not the time to be playing right now, especially the time that we living in.
That's right.
You feel what I'm saying? You can't put on a record and say, man, shit, I got $1 million and you got niggas in your neighborhood hurting. That means you're out of touch.
Mm.
That means you don't care. You feel me? So that's kind of like how I feel. I'm glad we came out on the Soul Food pedestal, man, because people still remember that.
And then piggyback, what are you saying? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're absolutely right. I'm so fortunate and it's such a blessing that we did or moved, compelled, and used and utilized to do the music that we did because it is truly music that we can grow old gracefully with.
And not be embarrassed that you ever did it.
Right.
Nah. And there's times we can still perform it, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, with the same currency, you know what I'm saying? Like the same, you know what I mean? Like, urgency, the same compassion, you know what I'm saying? The same quality, right. The same movement, manner, you know what I'm saying? You feel me? and muscle.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if you were asking from in that context of how we remain friends and,
yeah,
and comrades, man, because love, devotion, loyalty, commitment, you know what I'm saying, like tolerance, you know what I'm saying, like communication, you know what I'm saying, and obligation, you know what I'm saying, like, because we really ganged in. You know what I'm saying?
It's in your skin, it's in your blood. I always see you guys represent each other, man. All of the, no matter what projects y'all do individually, it's always get from the Goody Mob. CeeLo from the Goody Mob. Timo from the Goody Mob. Cujo from the Goody Mob. You, Goody Mob is always in it.
Yes, sir.
I think Goody Mob is in your soul, man. It's what y'all were meant to be. Amen, God bless y'all. Amen. I'm glad we got you.
It's saying that too, man, because even if sometimes, you know, as an artist and as a human being, you may get frustrated.
Oh, you get sick of these motherfuckers at some point.
You know, and not with
y'all motherfuckers got to get sick of each other at some point.
I'm glad you can talk. Please say that.
I'm going to say sometimes you may get frustrated with music sometimes and want to just explore some different angle with the way you coming and be like, okay, man, should I try something new? It just seems like people just not taking to it the way I want them to. And it don't even come out sounding right if it ain't goody. If it ain't sound, if it don't have a purpose, it don't come out sounding right for me. I done tried it before. I done tried, you know, in the studio, go in there and talk about some pussy, talk about getting hit, or just see what it sound like, you know what I mean? Just to give it a try. And it just don't come out right. You know what I mean? That's, like you say, that's what we here to do. That's what I know, that's my purpose, to be militant and to put everything in my music and to get out here and beat this concrete. And that's what Good and Mob known for, man. We get out. That's how we... Like you asked us about our album on Soul Food, man, we worked hard for that record to get where it was at. I mean, we worked so hard. I can remember, man, us not even get a chance to eat some days. I mean, as soon as we hit, we might fly out of town, going to Chicago, get to Chicago, hit the ground. They say, okay, we going to this radio station, going to this record store. We got this meet and greet and sell. Y'all got a show here. Then we hopping on the bus, we going here. Man, it was no time to even breathe. So it wasn't lucky. We weren't one of them groups that we just put a hot hit out, bam, we risk, we laid back, relaxing. Man, we grinded this.
And you put that work in.
We put it in.
Man, I appreciate y'all, man. Gip, CeeLo, Timo, Cujo. Hey, Goody Mob, man. God damn, bro. Historic moment for me, man. Historic moment for me. Hey, Lover, come on, son, the podcast. Y'all know how I get down. Now get the fuck out of here with that bullshit.
Yeah,
this Ed Lover podcast is being done in conjunction with Cigars International. Make sure you check out CigarsInternational.com for all your cigar needs.
This episode of Come On, Son, the podcast is produced and engineered by co-executive producers Kimana Paulus and Krista Hayes. Recorded at Mean Street Studios in downtown Atlanta, Georgia, this is an official Loudspeakers Network podcast.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.